Bro, Twitter is so funny, dog. How is it still free?
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_bball. We are going to talk about the 9 games that we had on Thursday. We're going to preview the 6 game slate we've got for Friday for DFS, and we're going to shine that player spotlight onto a rookie from the Detroit Pistons, Luke Kennard. All of that in today's show. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Yep. Really, really good idea. A very eventful day today in the NBA. We'll cover all that in today's show as well. But we'll start with the monstrous line of the night, and that goes to Nikola Jokic.
Pretty good. It's pretty good.
Yeah, he is. 23, 12, and 10 with 2 triples, 3 steals, and 3 blocks, 8 of 15 from the field, and 5 of 6 from the line. He is the 13th ranked player overall this season. And I remember a month or two ago, people were like, oh man, how could you possibly have ever taken Jokic in the first round? Well, over the last 2 months, he's the 9th ranked player. So the reason you would take him in the first round is because he's a first round fantasy player. In that time, he's averaging 19, 11, and 7.5 with 1.5 threes, with a steal, and with 0.8 blocks. So almost averaging a triple one, as well as averaging a double double with over 7 assists. Now, his overall season rank is a little bit depressed for a couple of reasons. The fact that he's averaging just 6 assists, and he was quite low on assists early in the season. 6 assists over the course of the year, but as I said, over the last 25 or over the last 40 games, he's averaging 7. So we're seeing the big discrepancy there. And his field goal percentage is under 50% for the year, but over the last 26 games, he's up at 52%, a number which is getting closer to the 58% that he shot last season. He's seen his efficiency drop a little bit this year from 64, actually, true shooting, down to 61. But as I mentioned, with all those other numbers over the last 2 months, that has skyrocketed back to numbers very similar to what we saw from him last season. Will he ever be a 20-point scorer in the NBA? Maybe. I don't think he'd go too much higher than that. Can he be a guy that averages 20, 12, and 8? Maybe the 8's a little bit too high. He has been averaging over 8 assists over the last month, and a lot of those games have been with Paul Millsap. So he could realistically be a 20, 12, and 8 and triple one guy, and 50-plus, 80-plus percentages, which would put him very, very comfortably inside the top 10 and probably even higher. This is just his third season in the NBA, and there are all these weird things that do happen with him. There's the idiocy of the coaching that sometimes is a real pain in the ass. There's the weird mix between him and Paul Millsap. There's the stupid fouls that he gives away, although he has improved on that quite significantly this season. There's the odd game where he just seems to pout and not give effort offensively and just defer all shots. Then he'll almost invariably come out and drop 40 in the next game. But he has these weird off sort of performances. But overall, he has been an absolute stud this season and really bringing it home for you as a top 10 guy over the past couple of months. So Nikola Jokic is your monstrous line of the night. Talk a little bit more about the Nuggets later. I have some things to say. The waiver wire line of the night goes to Mick Beasley of the New York Knicks. 24, 13, and 7. 7 assists from Michael Beasley, man. You might as well print this screenshot out and frame it, because I don't know how often that's going to happen again. He had a triple one. He was 11 of 16 from the field and 1 of 3 from the line. He got another start with Lance Thomas out due to family issues, so Beasley saw his minutes go back up. It's been a roller coaster ride with Beasley. When Porzingis went down, he was able to come in and start and put up big numbers, and then everything really fell apart and he saw his minutes drop. He was benched in favor of Lance Thomas as Jeff Hornacek, and again, lots of things for me to say about the Knicks as well, decided that he was going to go in a let's play the worst basketball players that we possibly can type scenario, and that's happening with Thomas starting over him. But Beasley has scored over 20 points in each of the last 2 games. He double-doubled in 2 of the last 3 games, started 2 of those 3, the 2 that Thomas missed. But I still don't have a full degree of confidence in him putting up these sort of numbers once Lance is back, which is most likely going to be the next game. But if you're in need of some points with some rebounds, it's all about getting short-term need at this point of the season, unless you're on a bye week. Yeah, Beasley could be that guy that does really help you out. He is still outside the top 150 over the course of the season, but over the last 3 months, in only 25 minutes, he is the 87th ranked player. But his value ebbs and flows depending on how his field goal percentage looks. But in terms of just providing points and threes, points and rebounds, that's a pretty steady thing with B. Some days he'll get you some blocks, some days he'll get you some assists, but those other numbers are fairly consistent and fairly steady. The young gun of the night goes to DeJounte Murray of the San Antonio Spurs. 18 points with 12 rebounds, and the starting point guard having zero assists is not something you see that often. He hit a triple, which again is probably even more rare than him here and having zero assists, 4 steals, 8 of 13 from the field, and 1 of 2 from the free throw line. Murray has been an interesting player. Had the opportunity to start the season with Tony Parker out, did not seize that at all. And then when Parker came back, he took that starting job back over, and he's been pretty strong since then. The last 2 months, he's the 78th ranked player on the back of the 7 rebounds and 1.5 steals, and that half a block he's giving you, plus the 49% shooting. Just a real weird sort of point guard mix of stats. Low assists, no threes, high field goal percentage, high rebounding, good shot blocking, but you can still make use of those numbers. And of course, if he is on your waiver wire, you should be adding him in most cases, but it always depends on what you need, how the schedule fits, where do his games fall in comparison to if you've got an open roster spot. So for example, for this week, the Spurs play one more game on Saturday against Minnesota. Pretty big game load on Saturday. So will he actually see your active roster spot? This is if he's still on the waiver wire. And he most likely won't be, but he very well could be. So go and have a look. But does it make sense to burn that ad and use him on Saturday? And even then, do you need what he provides? And that's the steals and rebounds, mainly as his two major categories. Do you need those stats? If not, then burning that waiver wire spot or burning that weekly acquisition is not going to be worth it. I think his overall value in the future is always going to be held back by the lack of shooting in terms of three-pointers and the lack of scoring. The field goal percentage is nice. The free throw percentage is okay with room to improve. The steals we love, the blocks we love, the rebounds we love. But will he ever be able to create for himself or for others? And will he ever be able to hit threes? And those things are significantly in doubt at this point. But of course, it is only his second season, so there is a long way to go for DeJounte Murray. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. Yusuf Nurkic, 7 points with 10 rebounds and 2 assists and a block. It's not a horrendously dud night, but 3 of 9 from the field and 1 of 4 from the free throw line, and he did not crack 20 minutes due to foul trouble. It's not ideal, especially coming off a 27-16 game with 3 blocks where he was almost the monstrous line of the night in that game. We know what's been going on with Nurkic. He's up and down. His minutes fluctuate. Over the last month, he's outside the top 115, but he's still does need to be owned in all 12-team leagues and probably 10s, but 8-team leagues, I don't think that I'd be classing Yusuf Nurkic as a must-own player in that scenario. His free agency is going to be really interesting, especially with Zach Collins there in Portland. What do they do? What contract does he get? It is restricted, so he's probably going to be really, really tightly squeezed, and he could very comfortably come back on a qualifying offer. I could see that go down for a lot of restricted free agents in this coming off-season. Let's head into these games now and talk about what went down on Thursday. All 9 of those games across the NBA. The first one we look at, the Toronto Raptors and the Indiana Pacers. Big game from Jonas Valanciunas. He has been a monster this season. 16-17 in 27 minutes with 4 blocks. And about 3 months ago, if you had said to me, well, Valanciunas is going to be crushing it at this point of the year, I would have said, no way. He's playing 16 minutes a night, 13 minutes a night, 18 minutes a night, and really getting minimized. But since then, he has taken control back of this starting center job and putting up big numbers consistently. DeRozan had 24-4-7, while Lowry had 13-6-6, and Ibaka, a rare double-double for Serge, 13-11. OG Anunoby was healthy, but did not see the court at all as Malcolm Miller started. Not that anyone's really owning OG this season outside of dynasty formats, but it's going to be interesting to see exactly what they do with him and Miller and Norm Powell for the rest of this year. While Freddie VanVleet, he struggled a bit. 2 points, 3 rebounds, and 2 assists. And this is why he's a streaming guy, but not a must-own type of a player. On to the Pacers. Well, Domantas Sabonis was out. He's going to be out for the Pacers next game as well with an ankle injury. And then we had Miles Turner sprain his ankle and go to the locker room, come back and play, sprain his ankle and go to the locker room, come back and play, and then sprain his ankle again and go to the locker room and not come back. He ended up with what they announced as a high ankle sprain, which are the three words for lower leg injuries that, apart from a torn Achilles tendon, that really get you worried, because those sort of bastards can last for a really long time. Now, straight away, the question is, do I drop Miles Turner? In most cases, look, I don't know. We don't know if he's going to play, and unless we have a definite time frame of stuff, it's very unlikely that you just drop someone. Oh, he's game finished, I'm just dropping him. Well, let's wait. Let's wait to see what happens tomorrow. Let's wait to see what happens the next day. And then maybe you drop him if he's going to be out for the Pacers next game and you really need someone, then you drop him there and stream that spot in. It's not an ideal scenario to have to do it, but you definitely don't do it straight away after his game and go, well, I'm dropping him now. Like, what's the purpose of that? Unless there's some crazy, awesome free agent out there, which again is probably unlikely, and you've probably got someone else who's more expendable that you could make that initial drop for. But in nearly all cases, when you say, should I drop this person? The answer is no, because you're never just dropping someone for a zero. It's, should I drop for this person? Should I drop Miles Turner for Malcolm Miller? No. Should I drop Miles Turner because someone mistakenly dropped Draymond Green because of his injury? Of course you do. It's very dependent. Those are very extreme examples, obviously. But it's always, and especially like after a game like this, or after a game, like, you don't drop him. You wait until you see what the next game is. You got a couple of days to see what his status is going to be, and then I would go from there. With both Sabonis and Miles Turner out, Al Jefferson scored 20 points, had 12 rebounds, had a steal and a block in 25 minutes, and he could be in for a big, big game the next time the Pacers play, with Turner and Sabonis both likely to be out. Trevor Booker should also see an increase of minutes. He did jack shit in this one, 0 of 5 for 0 points and 5 rebounds in 19 minutes, while Thad Young had 18 and 5 with 3 steals, so he should see an increase in production as well. Dazza Collison played more minutes than Corey Joseph for the first time since he returned. He had 22, 2, and 4 in 28 minutes, while Joseph had 6, 3, and 4. Triple one for Joseph still, but this is what I need to say, all right, well, it's fine to hang on to Daz now. If he was on my wire, I'd go back and add him, because this is a good sign that he played this well and he got those extra minutes over Corey Joseph. Bojan Bogdanović, man, he has just been, I think he's 2 of 21 over the past two games. This is just what he does. Drop him. He was going through an extraordinarily, well, let me rephrase that. Drop him if there's someone else out there that you want, but he should be considered a droppable guy. Because it's what he does. Hot streaks and then really ice cold streaks. Now, I don't expect him to continue to shoot at 9%, which has happened over the last two games. But I also don't expect him to go at 54%, which is what he was doing for the previous two or three weeks before this cold spell. The next game, the Philadelphia 76ers and the New York Knicks. Bob Cove strong again, 15 and 5 with 5 triples, a steal and a block. You weathered that storm, and it was a prolonged shitful storm from Covington, but he's come back really strong at this point of the year, while Joel Embiid had 29 and 10 with 2 blocks, another masterful performance. Dario Saric also awesome, 21 and 12 with 4 threes, and Benny Simmons triple-doubled. Very little to talk about fantasy-wise for the Sixers. Redick had 18, Bellinelli had 10. The bench doesn't do really anything at all. TJ McConnell wasn't able to put up another triple-double against the Knicks. There's just very little movement in terms of their overall fantasy value. On to the Knicks. Talked about Beasley already. The New York Knicks treatment, usage, development of Frank Ntilikina, it feels pretty embarrassing at this point. We saw, they just refused to give him starting minutes. They refused to start him over Ramon Sessions or Jarrett Jack for months and months and months, and then decided we were going to make him a shooting guard. Are we going to make him a shooting guard now? Cool. Dumb, but cool. Let's do it. So we can run Manuel Moutier and Trey Burke, two really, look, young-ish, but bad and failed players who've had their opportunity and sucked at it. So we'll make him a shooting guard. Cool. That's fine. We'll do that. Courtney Lee is out. Frank starts, Courtney Lee comes back, Frank starts, and then we'll go, you know what, let's bench Ntilikina and play him under 20 minutes for the next two games, while Courtney Lee plays 37 minutes in a game. And then, before the game, Hornacek saying, well, we haven't necessarily decided that Frank's a shooting guard, we still think he's a point guard. What's this shit then? Then play him at point guard in a season that's going nowhere, over two guys who are bad in Moutier and Trey Burke. Hornacek is a very, very bad coach. This decision-making is absolutely horrendous. You can't, you know, not play this guy at his position, move him to another position, say this is his new position, then say, no, well, it's not his new position. We think his old position should be his new position, and then not play him there anyway so he can give 37 minutes to Courtney Lee and let Emmanuel Moutier be the worst player in the NBA. It is nonsense. Absolute nonsense, and Knicks fans should be pissed and should be pissed at a very high level. Timmy Hardaway wasn't a good night. 9 points with 6 rebounds and 5 assists. The 6 and 5 is nice. The shooting is not good, but of course, we still own him. While Kylo Quinn, 24 minutes, 15 and 10, 3 steals and a block. I think he's got to be in 12-team consideration. Now, I wouldn't say that he is a must-own guy, because it really depends. What do you need? Defense and rebounds and field goal percentage? Sure. You need assists and threes and points, and probably someone else you can go for. But if you need those stats that Cox bringing, the minutes are up, the production's solid, and I'm happy with it. Trey Burke had 16 points on 64% shooting. That's unlikely to continue, as we've talked about with Burke. He's very much a Bojan Bogdanovic type. The shooting is going to go up and down. While Courtney Lee had 16 in 37 minutes, and it's just laughable. If it wasn't so annoying, it would be laughable. Let's go on to the Charlotte Hornets and the Atlanta Hawks. Big win for the Hornets. Big numbers from Dwight, who had 33 and 12 with 2 steals and 2 blocks. Centers against the Hawks is getting pretty close to centers against the Nets. You just crushed against them. Pretty much anyone against the Hawks, to be honest. Kemba had 24, 4 and 8, while Nick Batum triple-doubled. He played 40 minutes, which seems a lot. Well, not seems a lot. It is a lot. 10, 10 and 16 for him. Jez Lamb played through his injury. He had 11 and 5. He is a points efficient points streamer, while Marv Williams had one of his better games, 17 points in 27 minutes, but I am chalking that up almost exclusively to the opponent he was up against. Now, it wasn't a good night for Frank the Tank, who had 11, and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Foul trouble limited him to just 16 minutes, but we're talking 18-team leagues only for him. Also, Bill Hernangómez, just the season's lost. It's been horrible. I don't know what's going to happen with him next season, but it has not been good. On to the Hawks. The artist, formerly known as Taurean Prince, did it again. 22, 10, and 6 with 6 triples. This guy is putting up massive numbers at the moment. There's going to be a drop-off. It may be next game, maybe the game after, but he is a clear must-own guy, as is the Baptist John Collins, who had 21 and 9 with 2 triples and 2 steals. And I'm really encouraged by the fact that not only did he hit 2 threes, but he took 3 of them in total. So really good numbers there. Tyler Dorsey, who played under 20 minutes in his last game as a starter, started once more and played 27 and had 11, 3 and 4. And this is a more realistic expectation for Dorsey as we move forward. It could be a stream option, but it's more likely going to be a 14 or probably 16 team league guy. I also would be looking at Damian Lee, who's now played 2 games in the NBA. He's got a pretty successful brother-in-law in Steph Curry, and he had 14 points in 26 minutes with 3 triples. Strong, 20-team leagues, I'd be jumping on Damian Lee at this point. Schroeder's minutes, I don't think they're ever going to push to 32 or 33 again. He had 17 and 8 in only 27 minutes, while The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, had 5 and 6 in 22 minutes. If you need to move on from him, then you can consider that. I would very comfortably have John Collins over the Undertaker at this point. The Chicago Bulls and the Memphis Grizzlies, just a comical finish to this game. It was just look, the rotations from the Bulls are all over the place. Justin Holiday rested his 3rd consecutive game, so you know what it feels like. It's happened. The NBA has come to the Bulls and said, look, Chicago, look, look, Pax, look, Freddie. You can't be sitting out your starters, Justin Holiday and Robin Lopez. You've got to play them. And they went, oh, fair enough. We'll play them. And then after a couple of games, they've gone back to the NBA and they've gone, Adam, have you actually seen Justin Holiday play? Because he's not good. And the players that we're playing when he rests are actually significantly better than him. So I think the NBA has gone, you know what? You got us. You don't have to play Holiday because he's not actually a starter caliber player. So because that rule apparently is gone. You can't make an argument that Felizio is a better player than Robin Lopez. No one can make that argument. But that concern about resting Holiday is done. He's just sat out the last 3 games. So that, look, it appears like it's done. Nwaba only played 14 minutes in a start. He had 10 and 4 in that game. While the Hammer only played 20 as well. Denzel Valentine, 15, 5 and 4. But that's more in line with what I expected from him in this stretch run. Antonio Blakeney, he's got a real case of the fart and Will Bartons about him, just jack shots at whatever, whenever he wants. 10 points in 25 minutes, and the end of this game was comical. The Bulls were down by 2 points, and Cameron Payne brought the ball up, who actually closed this game with Payne and Blakeney were the backcourt closing over Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn, because Dunn had a sprained toe. Payne gave it to Blakeney, and Blakeney just stood there with the ball, and was just like, cool, I'm the best player here, because delusion's obviously a real factor. And then down 2 points and waits till there's 1 second left, takes a contested three, and Tyreek Evans goes, we're not letting you bastards lose this, and fouled him on the 3-point shot, so that Blakeney went to the line, hit two of those three shots, and the Bulls ended up winning in, again, a comical end to the game. I don't know where Blakeney's minutes fit in when Lauri Markkanen comes back or if Justin Holiday ever returns, but he should be a deeper league option. As for Dunn, 6-2-4 with 2 steals. I don't think that he's going to be touching 30 minutes a night for the rest of the year, regardless of this fake toe sprain, or maybe it's a real toe sprain. If you need to move on from him, do it. Do it. Zach LaVine, 20 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, only the 26 minutes as he sat out down the stretch. I think he might be in a similar boat and he won't be touching 30 minutes. This is a good performance from LaVine. Obviously, he just brutalizes your field goal percentage, so you have to pay attention to that, but otherwise a good game from him. While my boy Campaign, he shot poorly, but added 2 triples, had 3 rebounds, and had 5 assists. And if he's going to play mid-20s in minutes, then 14-team leagues need to start paying attention, and he'll be stream-worthy in 12-team leagues, and that is a wild sentence to say. PunchBob Shiploke had 17-5 with 3 steals and 3 triples. Puts up the numbers, should be owned in all leagues, as much as I don't like him as a player. Also one of the preeminent Shiplokes in the league, but we're going to talk about another one of those later on. The Memphis Grizzlies, Tyreek Evans is back. No shutdown. 25, 5-9, 2 steals, 5 triples, 33 minutes, and they still lost. Evans, it should be without saying, if he's on your wire, he is an automatic, absolute no-brainer of an ad. And I love the fact that he came back in the first week of my 30D playoffs, because I was screwed without him. I'm pretty much screwed anyway without Jim Butler. But good to have him back. Marc Gasol, 21, 10, and 8 with 2 blocks and 2 triples. Didn't sit out the entire fourth quarter like he did last time against the Bulls. I think at this point, with the Grizzlies losing 19 games straight, they actually don't mind getting a win, but they can't do it. They're that bad. One of the more underrated stealth tank moves in the NBA is starting Jarrell Martin at small forward, and it happened again. He had 16-4 in 31 minutes. The production's there, so he can be a useful guy. They really limited Benny McLemore down to 8 minutes and Chandler Parsons down to 6. With Tyreek back and McLemore getting so few minutes, if you added him for some point streamers, you can move on. Dylan Brooksy Brooks had 15 points with 3 assists and 2 steals. He got a lot of those early, I think 11 in the first quarter, and then was silent. With Tyreek back, I think some of his usage and effectiveness will drop off now. While Jermichael Green had a nice double-double, 15 and 10 with a block. It's solid enough if you need those certain stats. We also had Bionte Weber make his Grizzlies debut. He took those backup minutes off Kobe Simmons, who played only 7 minutes, while Weber played 21. Very little value in either of those guys. The next game, the LA Clippers and the Houston Rockets. Toby Harris, man, this guy's killing it. 29-8, 3 triples and a block, while DeAndre had 8-18 with 2 blocks, and Austin Rivers, Lou Williams both played well also. The table, Montrezl Harrell has seen his minutes decline for 3 consecutive games. He's at under 15 again here, 10-5. The production's still okay, but there are much better options, I believe, in any 12-team format. While Sindarius Thornwell made another start and played 37 minutes, but just did nothing with it. 6 points, failed to get a rebound, and had a steal. He's really just a steals streamer at this point, and a deeper league sort of a player. On to the Rockets, Clint Capella. That's massive from Capella. 19-12, 1 steal and 6 blocks. Not the only player to get 6 blocks today. Eric Gordon, he is just wildly inconsistent. He had 23-6 with 7 triples after going, I think, scoreless in the last game, maybe having 1 point. If you need points and threes, he's fine. If you need anything else, don't rely upon Eric Gordon for it. Well, Jimmy Harden had 24-5-7, and Chris Paul was bad. 11-4-3 on 13 shots. That is a poor, poor performance from Chrissy. Still no Ryan Anderson, so PJ Tucker, Luke Marmute got the bump there, but they're really just 16, 18, 20-team league sort of players. The New Orleans Pelicans and the San Antonio Spurs, bad loss for the Pelicans. Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis were great. 24-8-7 for Drew, 2 threes, 2 steals, and 3 blocks, while Davis had 24-14 and 2 blocks. But Rajon Rondo is probably the hardest player in the league to work out what's going to happen on a nightly basis. One game removed from playing 36 minutes and dishing 17 assists, he played 24 and had 6, 5, and 5 and was putrid. and Ian Clark was consistently better than him. I think that when Solomon Hill finally returns, we're going to see much less minutes or much fewer minutes from Rajon Rondo. You still have to hold him, but I think that that's probably going to change when Hill returns. Nick Mirotic started with Emeka Okafor going to the bench, just the 29 for Mirotic. 29 minutes, 6 points on 12 shots with 10 rebounds. Not his best night. In a shallow league, 8-team league, you can drop him. I reckon even in a 10-team, you have to consider that. Well, Okafor had 6 and 5. Also good to see 8 minutes of DeAndre Liggins for God knows what reason. On to the Spurs. Pau Gasol was on the bench, only 10 minutes, 8 and 5. I don't think that holding him in 12-team leagues is necessarily a prudent move. Or Pat Mills was terrible in a start. And Dan Green, he started pushing Pau to the bench, 30 minutes, 5.7 rebounds, but 6 blocks. Did have 2 of 11 shooting, but 6 blocks out of a shooting guard is bananas. But he is just really a defensive stat streamer, not a 12-team league guy. Kyle Anderson had the 6-5-4-3-2 line, 6 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, and 2 blocks. Defense is where the value really comes from Anderson. He's a low upside, solid floor, 12-team league player. But Kawhi, maybe Kawhi's returning soon. Who bloody knows? Nobody at this point. And if you're, you know, 3 days away from playoff elimination and you're still holding Kawhi with no IR spot, get rid of him. There's no point having him. And then because even when he comes back, he's probably going to play every second game and probably 15 minutes a night. Move on. I think in a lot of cases, it's move on time from Kawhi Leonard. As what a sentence that is to say. Imagine you had us said that back in August. The Phoenix Suns and the Utah Jazz, another huge win for the Jazz, who are irrepressible at the moment. Tyson Chandler was a DNPCD for the second consecutive game, but it wasn't Dragan Bender who started at center. It was Alex Len resurrected. 23 minutes for Lenny, 3-9 with 2 blocks, but with big source Alan Williams' return on deck, it's hard to get excited about Len outside of deeper leagues. Bender had 7-6, while Tony Warren Jr. had 19-6. But I want to talk about the potential worst player in the NBA, definitely a top 3 ship bloke in the NBA, and that's Marquese Chris. He had 14 minutes, 4 points, 4 rebounds, and 1 block. Is there a player who exhibits a lower IQ on the court than this bloke? Is there a more disinterested or a player who does the least with the most in the NBA than Marquese Chris? And then you add in the fact that that was an absolute shit bloke effort for him on Ricky Rubio. He went for a dunk, and mind you, this is how this started. Marquese Chris went for a dunk, airballed it, missed the rim, didn't touch the rim, fell over. Rubio picked the ball up and stepped over Chris's ankles as he was laying on the ground and inballed the ball. Got the ball back, and Jared Dudley decided he was going to smash him. All right, Rubio went down, came back up, confronted Dudley. In comes King Shiploke from the side and just smacks Rubio down. Now, rightfully ejected, should be suspended. And you know what? The Suns probably say, no, please don't suspend him. We actually need him to play so we can continue to lose games. It is his second season, but as I have said for the last 2 years, he is a bad basketball player and it hasn't improved. And add in this on-court shiplokeness, the off-court shiplokeness, the pouting, the fouling, the grumbling, the moaning, He's bad. He is honestly bad. Is there a worse player in the NBA? Two-way contract players, or a worse rotation player in the NBA? He is horrendous. That was a shiploken effort, as I've seen. I'll tell you who also is in the shiploke category. Jay Triano. For him to come out and say, I think that Joe Ingles and Donovan Mitchell should have been ejected as well, because they did as much as anybody else to escalate the situation. Obviously ignoring the fact that his cocksucker's the guy that ran in and threw the hit on Rubio when he wasn't involved in the initial collision. But Ingles coming in to stick up for his teammate is the worst guy, and Mitchell. One thing I also hate about NBA fights, what are these blokes in the suits coming off the bench and getting stuck into it? So Chris does this, Ingles goes after him, and some big bloke in the suit comes in and starts grabbing Ingles, like, get your hand off you, mate. You're not even playing the game. Let these guys go and fake tough guy each other. But all these guys in suits run on and start holding and hitting these other. But what's going on here? It is a wild scene. Triana needs to go. Chris needs to go. There is just a real culture and attitude problem with the Suns team. And hopefully for Suns fans, because I know lots of them, hopefully they get it turned around. But it was piss poor. Devin Booker was not good. 12 points on 18 shots with 5 rebounds and 2 assists in this game. That efficiency really out the window. While Lord Alfred Payton was nice while it lasted post trade deadline, but it's been terrible since. 4 points in 17 minutes, and you should be putting him on the drop list. Who's out there that you can grab? Have a look. But if you need someone else, if you need to stream a spot, the minutes are consistently going down for Payton, and you should move on in a lot of cases, especially in 10 and 12 team formats. Joshie Jackson had 17 and 9 in 24 minutes. I don't like the minutes, but that's okay enough for a 12 teamer. On to the Jazz, another big game from Jay Crowder, 15 and 8, 2 steals and 2 triples. I would prefer him over Derek Favors in standard leagues. Favors can go in the most of those. He had 5 and 6. The Don had 23, 6 and 4. Wasn't great from the line, just 1 of 4, but a nice night, while Gobert had 21 and 13 with 2 blocks, and Ravishing Rick had 12, 5 and 11 with 4 steals and 2 triples, and Jingling Joe had 17, 2 and 3 with 4 threes. So good nights from all of the stars for Utah, but a big, big thing to see Dante Exum back out there. 14 minutes for Dante, 10, 3, and 2. Now, the outlook for him on this Jazz team is not necessarily bright. Unlikely to see him getting a starting job next season, maybe if they trade Rubio, but Rubio's been really key to this, you know, big stretch that they've had recently. Is Exum's fantasy value ever going to do anything? I really have my doubts at this point, but he keeps showing us little flashes where you go, oh, maybe he can become good. But then inevitably it seems like an injury comes or everything just fades away. But he should be in the rotation here the rest of the season ahead of Alec Burks, and with Hull Neto out with that wrist injury, I don't think there's much concern there. The Detroit Pistons and the Denver Nuggets. Dwight Bikes was back from his injury. He played 23 minutes and had 22 points with 4 assists and 2 steals, and outplayed Ish Smith, who played 25 minutes, had 8, 3, and 6. Smith's not a 12-team league guy either. I remember when Reggie Jackson went down, that there was many people telling me, oh man, this is good for the Pistons. The Pistons will be better because Ish Smith is better than Reggie Jackson. Ish Smith is bad. I think everyone should be able to see that now. He should not be a 12-team league player. He is not a good NBA player, and he stunk terribly here. Reggie Bullock was back, 17 points with 3 triples, high efficiency. This bloke just does not miss at this point, which is pretty weird. But that forced Luki Kennard into smaller minutes. And we're going to talk about Kennard later on in the player spotlight. He had 2 points, 2 rebounds, and 2 assists, while Jim Ennis was shit, as was Stan Johnson. Better mention Blake Griffin, who was really good, 26, 6, and 9, and Drummond, who had 21 and 17 with 3 blocks. Big performances from their big guys, despite the loss. On to the Nuggets. The Blue Arrow had 26 and 9 with 5 triples and 2 steals. And Fartin Will Barton had 23, 4 and 3 in 32 minutes. I said on yesterday's show he'd been poor for 2 consecutive games, but I was expecting a bounce back, and we saw that. While old baby neck Wilson Chandler played 36 minutes and went scoreless. He did have 8 rebounds and 5 assists, but he is not a 12-team league player. The big news out of this, though, is Gaz Harris.
Oh, no!
Went up for a dunk, hurt his leg, but we don't know the extent of it. And you know my disdain for Michael Malone. You know my issues with the doctor and his, you know, on-the-spot medical diagnoses. Harris limped off, and the Nuggets revealed it was knee irritation. That's fine. So then we asked, you know, because I wasn't there, but the reporters asked Malone what it was, and he said, oh, it's not his knee. It's not his ankle. It's somewhere in between. Huh? What's going on? What kind of answers? That's somewhere in between. So his leg, maybe his shin, his calf. What is this shit? Anyway, X-rays were negative on Gaza. He's going to have an MRI tomorrow. I would say if they were playing anyone other than the Memphis Grizzlies, unless it was the Phoenix Suns, he would play across the weekend. We know that every win is vital for the Nuggets, and he seemed okay. No brace, no crutches, no anything like that after leaving, and seemed pretty relieved in the locker room. But because it is the Grizzlies, I can see Gaz sitting that game out. But much like Miles Turner, do I drop Gaz Harris? No, you wait. You wait to see what happens tomorrow, and then you wait. Because again, Saturday's a big volume day. You possibly would be able to actually fill someone or fill a spot in your lineup with one of your bench guys. There's no point dropping Gaz Harris now to get someone in for tomorrow, and then he's ready to play on Saturday. And it's not like you necessarily would lose a game if you could actually fit someone in his spot off your roster. So no, I wouldn't be dropping him. Let's wait and see exactly what happens with him tomorrow. The last game of the night, the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Portland Trailblazers.
LeBron James.
35, 14, and 6. 2 steals and 3 blocks. He remains ridiculous. The rest of the team remains ridiculous, but in the other direction. Although, to be fair, Kyle Korver was good, 19 points in 38 minutes, and he started at shooting guard alongside Rocket Rodney Hood, who was on a minutes restriction and had 5 in 18 minutes. At this point, out of Korver, the plumber, and Rocket, I would have Kyle and really just use him as a points and three streamer, not a 12-team league guy. Georgie Hill played big minutes and did nothing with them, 8, 4, and 3, while Jordy Clarkson had 14 off the bench, and neither of those guys, I don't think, are 12-teamers. But we did have a weirdness sighting here.
My name is Jeff.
Jeff Green started at centre and put up 16, 5 and 4, with Larry Nance dealing with a hamstring issue, which it doesn't look like it's going to cost him too much time, if any more at all. Green could have some value the next time the Cavs play. Initially, it was going to be Ante Zizic that started. That didn't happen, and Zizic played only 6 minutes in this game for 2 blocks. So Green could be a short-term value guy. Big win for the Blazers. They have now won 11 consecutive games. McCollum had 29 points. Lillard had 24, 3 and 9. They're always primed for big games because the Cavs can't defend shit. And that also enabled Mo Harkless to score 17. And the Chief.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Al-Farouq Aminu played 37 minutes. He had 11 and 9 with 3 threes and a block. It's a great game from Aminu. But we know that he'll probably be shit in the next game. And the opponent clearly helped out in providing those sort of numbers. I talked about Nurkic already. Zachy Collins only saw the 8 minutes, while Eddie Davis did nothing but brought 9 boards. An elite rebound streaming option is Ed Davis. All right, that wraps up all of the action from Thursday. Let's go straight in now and do some player spotlight action. And we're going to head to Detroit and we're going to talk about Lukey Kennard of the Detroit Pistons. Kennard has not had an excellent rookie season. I think from an overall fantasy point of view, that's fair to say. He's the 292nd ranked player this year, averaging just 6.6 points with 2.2 rebounds and 1.5 assists. Hitting a triple though, but more, the most important thing here is A, he's hitting 85% of his free throws, and B, he's hitting 41% of his three-pointers, and at 55% true shooting for a rookie, that's really impressive. The minutes aren't there because Van Gundy is stubborn, he's prickly, and he makes poor decisions often. And I think some of the decisions of not playing Kennard have been really detrimental to not only the team this season, but to the team's future. Kennard's per 36 minutes should give us a better indication of sort of what we can expect. 13 points, 2 triples, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a steal on 43 and 85%. Well, and while that's not spectacular, especially the scoring on just a usage of only 16%, if he could get that usage up to 22 or 23 and start bringing in 16 points per game, he can be a 16, 3, and 4 sort of guy with a steal a game and with 2, 2.5 threes per game on pretty strong percentages as we move forward. I think he can be a really impactful guy. I'm not going to say Gaz Harris because he doesn't have anywhere near the defense of Gazza, but in terms of a shooting guard player who can hit the three, who can score and can do it efficiently and can play make a little bit, and he's a pretty strong rebounder, might even be a stronger rebounder than, say, Gaz. I think that he does have top 70, top 80 type potential, but when is it going to be realized under Van Gundy? There's no one that's taking that spot long term. Reggie Bullock's not a long term solution at shooting guard. Stan Johnson has floundered most of this season. Jim Ennis is not there for it at this point. Reggie Jackson and Ish Smith aren't taking away minutes for Kennard at the two. He can play a little bit at the one. He can play at the two. He can play at the three. Will it be next season that he takes that leap forward? The big hold up I see on it is Van Gundy. The team is 6.6 better with him. Points per 100 possessions better with him on the court. So they're a positive, which is a massive start as a rookie. You know, average true shooting. Defensive box score plus minus at negative 0.5. And yes, while it's a negative, but as a guard and as a rookie, I take that as a really huge positive sign for what he can do. Below average win shares, but the defensive stuff that he can provide, it keeps him on the court. He can play make. And I think by his third season, you're going to have top 100 value coming from Kennard as a guy who hits 2.5 threes per game, maybe gets you 4 assists, gets you 1.2 steals, and can play big minutes because he can stay on the court. I'm really, really interested in his future and how everything pans out for him. I've hated the way that he has been used this year. I think his development has been stunted at times. Very few rookies come in and shoot consistently 40% from three, which is what Kennard has done. He shot 44 from three last season at Duke, but very rarely does this happen for rookies in the NBA to be average true shooting, above average three-point shooting, positive contributors, and you know, not complete defensive liabilities, and he's got the ability to play make. I think that he is an excellent dynasty target. It really depends on the person who's got him, how they value him, whether they go white shooter JJ Redick, which he's not, or whether they can actually see the things that he has done. You could be able to get him at a pretty decent bargain, and I think that he is going to have a few top 100 seasons, and I think by his third season, or maybe be more conservative, his fourth season, I think we're going to be seeing 32 minutes a night from Kennard and some pretty strong numbers. I'm really excited to see what he does. The Van Gundy factor is an issue. I don't think he'll be there by Kennard's third season, and I think we could see Luke really stepping forward. There's no one clearly in his way. There's a big opportunity. He's shown me plenty in this rookie season, even though we haven't seen him as much as we would have wanted to. Let's talk some DFS now. Let's get into the perfect DFS lineups. We'll start with FanDuel for Thursday. At point guard, what a point guard combo. DeJounte Murray at 43.4 and Dwight Bikes at 33.2. Shout out to you if you had those two guys in your lineup. At shooting guard, former teammates Tyreek Evans 47.5 and Drewy Holiday had 58.1. The small forward combo is just as confusing. Michael Beasley had 53.1 and Mo Harkless had 30.8. At power forward, Toby Harris and Blake Griffin, the two blokes traded for each other, they were in your perfect lineup. 44.1 for Toby and 47.7 for Griff. While Nick Jokic had 68.4 for a total of 426.3, and that cost $59,900. On DraftKings, it was Drew at 55, Tyreek at 49.75, Beasley at 55.25, Al Jefferson at 43.5, Jonas Valanciunas at 50.25, Bikes at 32.75, Blakey Griffin at 50.5 and Nick Jokic at 69.5. That was a total of 406.5 and it cost the full $50,000 dues. All right, there are six games on Friday. This NBA week is completely topsy-turvy with the games distribution. Let's look at this action for Friday. The first game we look at, the Brooklyn Nets and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers are favored by 9. They are coming off a back-to-back, though, and the total is 217.5. They really need to make sure they get this victory to keep themselves in the push for home court advantage in the playoffs. Jarrett Allen has been upgraded to probable for the Nets, while the blue swimmer, Allen Crabb, is questionable. If Crabby is out, it boosts Spencer Dinwiddie, it boosts D'Angelo Russell, and it boosts Damari Carroll and Caris LeVert. All four of those guys get an increase in their value in this situation. At point guard, Timothy John McConnell's at 36. Point guards against the Nets, there's always opportunity, but you would only want to do that as a tournament. Well, Dinwiddie at 5,800. I like it as a tournament play because of the low price, but I would be much more interested if Crabb is actually ruled out. At shooting guard, you've got LeVert at 6,000. The same story. He's been exceeding that number recently, but if Crabby is out, I'm all about Caris there at 6,000. While D'Angelo Russell at 6,900, I'm going to say the same thing. He crushed in the last game, has two big games in a row, but could go either way. More of a tournament guy that really does get solidified by Crabb's absence, if that's what actually goes down. Ballinelli and Redick on the Sixers, I see very little interest in using those guys. The blue swimmer himself at 4,800. If he plays, he's always only a tournament guy because there's just no consistency. Well, Damari Carroll at 57. The numbers have really dipped from Carroll the last couple of games, but I think an opportunity for him to play more of the three if Crabb is out would really open him up for a 30-point game. Play some at the three, some at the four, and he would be an interesting target. As for Bob Cove at $6,000, his lowest score in his last five games, Covington, is 31. The matchup is a good one. It's really hard to put full trust in Covington, but the last five games would tell you you have to trust him at that price. I don't think I'm ready to do that, though. At power forward, Rondé is at 5,900, really playing well himself. I think that he is almost a 27 or 28-point lock here, so I'm all about Rondé. Ursulius Ilyasova, no thanks. Well, Benny Simmons at 9,400. Point guards against the Nets. Good opportunity for Simo. He's coming off a 41-point game today. Getting another 40 here shouldn't seem like too much of a stretch, or another 45, so I'm interested in Simo here. And Dario Saric at 6,900. I think that might be a little bit high for Saric. Yes, he had 37 today, but I think he's more of a 6'2 guy than a 6'9 guy. Although, let's be honest, we're all 6'9 guys at some point. At center, the process, Joel Embiid, 10,600. Centers against the Nets, this has got monster upside. Now, it is a back-to-back. Embiid apparently had a wrist issue, but then after the game he said, nah, I'm just wearing a thing on my wrist because it looks swaggy. So shout out to Embiid for screwing with everyone's mind fantasy-wise. At 10-6, you almost have to use him just because of the matchup against the Nets. He could go bananas. Well, Jarrett Allen at 43, I think it's really tough to consider him with the Embiid matchup and the Atkinson center rotations. On DraftKings, we've got a bunch of tournament guys here. D'Angelo Russell, Rondé Hollis-Jefferson, Damari Carroll. All, a lot of that value is really influenced by Alan Crabb's absence. And then you've got Embiid at 95, Simmons at 88, Šarić at 63, and LeVert at 5,000. I love LeVert at 5,000. I think that's super strong. But those other guys can be cash plays also. Covington at 6'2 is probably a little bit highly priced on DraftKings also. All right, we have got the next game. It's the Boston Celtics and the Orlando Magic. Al Horford is likely to return for Boston. Still no Jaylen Brown or Marcus Smart, while Kyrie Irving is considered doubtful. And Azar Gordon, still dealing with that concussion, he is questionable. If he is out, obviously it does boost the GPP upside of Mario Hezonja and Johnny Isaac, as well as John Simmons' value also. At point guard, Terry Rozier, 8,200. And that's fair enough because he dropped 54 last game, but it just feels way too high. There is no one else there, though. There's no Smart, there's no Brown, there's no Kyrie. So you've three of your first four options, or your top three options at the point guard and shooting guard position are all gone. So Rozier is going to play a lot of minutes. He's going to have every opportunity, but that is a big salary for Terry. And I think it might be a little bit bite in the arse-ish. DJ Augustin's at 5,500. He's coming off a big game against the Bucks where he put up 45 points. I don't think he's getting to that level again, but at 45, I can see him getting to that number, so I don't think that he's a terrible option here and could be an interesting cheap point guard to have a squeeze at. Shani Larkin at 39, is he still on a minutes restriction? I'm not sure, but even in his 24 minutes last game, he put up 24 points, and that's fine with me at 3,900. Well, Shelvin Max at 39 as well for Shelv. I'd take Larko over him. At shooting guard, there's nobody. At small forward, Jason Tatum, 6,600. Really struggled with inefficiency last game, but still put up 32 points. And if some of those shots go in at a higher rate than last time, he's going to obliterate this price point. So I do like Tatum here a lot. Hezonja at 46 is a GPP guy if as Gordon is out. Well, Johnny Simmons at 7,000. It's a big rise for Simo. If Gordon's out, I would feel like using him in cash is viable. If Gordon is in, I think it's more of a tournament situation for Johnny Simmons. Where's a Wundu and Ojale? No thanks. At power forward, Johnny Isaacs at 43. Mate, he can get 2 blocks, 3 steals in a game, and there's your value right there. So that makes him a tournament player, I believe. While Marcus Morris at 6,400. Really good numbers from Morris in the last game. The salary's gone up, but I still think he's in play at 6,400. While Gordo at 7,700, coming back off a concussion. I'd be a little bit hesitant to use him if he actually plays. Ken Birch saw big minutes last game, 29 minutes, 23 points, and at 3,600, if Gordo's out, he's a tournament guy. The centers, Al Horford, 7,200. I actually think Horford would be worth a look here if he's ready to go, which it looks like he will be. He didn't have an injury. He had an illness. I think it's 7,200 with a bigger opportunity for him to put up numbers. Love it. Baines is at 4,500. He loses some value with Horf back, while Vooch at 9,000 has been putting up the big numbers. But Al Horford is a very good defender, so I think I'd fade Vooch at that salary, while Greggy Munro.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Greggy's at 4,800. I don't think there are enough minutes there for him to exceed that value with Horford likely back playing. On DraftKings tournament, Bainesy maybe at 3,800 you could have a squiz out, while Johnny Isaac at 36 is a really good tournament option. And for cash, I like Marcus Morris. I like DJ Augustin at 5,200. I like Jace Tatum at 62, and I like Johnny Simmons a lot at 6,100. Rozier at 8,000, a similar sort of story. Horford at 7,000, not a bad option, but far from the best one that's out there. Let's go on to the next game now. We've got the Dallas Mavericks. We've got the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 11.5, and the total is 213 points. The Raptors on a back-to-back, but they are at home, and JJ Barea is listed as questionable for Dallas. We don't know about Norm Powell for Toronto, but he could be a guy that even if he's healthy, much like OG Anunoby last game, is not going to be a rotational guy. At point guard, Kyle Lowry is at 7,700. If the game stays close, he will exceed this value, no problem. He averages 48 the last 3 times against Dallas, but blowout risk is a real factor, so that puts him as a tournament guy. While Fred VanVleet has not played well lately. 18 points for DFS over his last 5 games, which is nowhere near that $4,800 salary. Yogi Ferrell at 4,200 will likely start again, but he is as up and down as they come, more downs than ups, and that really eliminates him from cash consideration. While Dennis Smith, Smith's getting minutes, he's getting touches, he's shooting terribly. I don't like the defense of either Kyle Lowry or DeLon Wright on him, so that would lead me to probably leave him alone. At shooting guard, DeMar DeRozan at 8,300. I think that's probably just a little bit too expensive, especially given the blowout nature of this game, or potential blowout nature. At small forward, CJ Miles, no thank you. The pencil, Harrison Barnes, 6,400. I feel like he's a safe-ish cash guy. I'll get 31, 32 out of him. Probably unlikely to get much more, but it's not a bad base price for cash games. Well, Dougie McDirt, Dorian Finney-Smith, who started last game, and he is just a putrid fantasy player, and the Jedi, not much interest in them. At power forward, Serge Ibaka had himself a nice double-double today, but it translated to just 23 fantasy points. And at 5,300 in a potential blowout, you can do better. I wouldn't want to use Dirk, despite him having a really good record against Toronto, and Pascal Siakam at 43. Well, Siakam is averaging 21 over the last five, but he could give you a complete dud, and I don't think his upside's high enough to consider him a tournament guy. At center, Nerlens Noel's at 4,400. Much like I talked about with Johnny Isaac, the steals and blocks upside is real for him, so that makes him a tournament sort of an option, while Poeltl at 48 and Valanciunas at 74. I think both those guys are a little bit too highly priced. I didn't talk about Dwight Powell, actually, at 5,100. I don't know what minutes he'll get. He got 9 minutes last game. Will he go back to 25? I'm not sure. At 5,100, I don't think the price is really in the right spot to take a huge gamble on using him. On DraftKings, DeRozan at 76, that's a much more exciting price. I can get behind using that. Same with Siakam at 37. Yeah, while there's not much upside in him when he's at 44 or 45, if he comes in at 37, I feel pretty good that he's going to break that cash value there. While Poeltl at 38 is a GPP guy, as is Noel at 38. So some really interesting cheap tournament centers over on DraftKings. Let's go on to the next game now. We're going to be looking at the LA Clippers and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Paul George and Steven Adams are both questionable. Obviously, that's a really big change if either or both of those guys are out. If Adams is out, you're looking at a big bump for Jeremy Grant and a small one for Pat Patterson. If Paulie George is out, you've got Josh Huestis, Alex Abrines, or Terry Ferguson, who could all be in line to start, but none of them really tickle my fancies in terms of a great tournament guy or in DFS in general. I think Melo takes on a huge, huge role, though, if Paul George happens to be gone. At point guard, Sindarius Thornwell's at 3,800. He's getting big minutes. The production is not very good, but he is a tournament option in a matchup which could work in his favor. Austin Rivers at 6,300. I feel okay about saying there's some cash solidity in using him. Or Westbrook at 12,1. Yeah, I think you have to like Westbrook at 12,1, especially with the uncertainty of Paulie. Milosh is at 4,000. I have very little interest in using Milosh at this point, while Fatface Ray Felton and Juwan Evans probably can be left alone. Lou Williams at 7,200. Love that price for Lou. The matchup is a positive one for him also, with no Andre Robertson. He averages 42 against the Thunder the last three times out, and expecting another 40 from Lou shouldn't be considered too outrageous. This is a key game for the Clippers. They need to win it. At small forward, Corey Brewer's at 4,900. Minutes every game, production every game. I actually like it, and I can't believe I'm saying it, especially with a cloud over Paul George's head. As for George at 8,500, if he is ready to go, I think that he is, I think he's an upside tournament guy. He averages 50 against the Clippers. He seems to do well against the Clippers, and I think that there is some definite animosity between himself and Doc. Yeah, there is. Because I am 99% sure he used to go out with Doc Rivers' daughter, and then cheated on her by banging a cheerleader, allegedly. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of a back and forward going on there. So that's something to keep in mind if Paul George happens to play. At power forward, Toby Harris is at 7,700. This guy's putting up numbers every game. No worries. For cash, that's really strong. Melo at 57. If Paul George is out, I would be all over Melo there. It could easily bite you in the ass, but Melo's been good the last two games and could get an extra opportunity to just bludgeon his way into numbers. Well, Jezza Grant at 3,900. I would smash that. If Steve Adams is out, I'm all about Jeremy Grant at under 4,000. The table, Pat Patterson, no thanks. At center, DeAndre Jordan at 8,400. I don't mind that as a cash center. He should be able to get you 40 nearly every night. While Steve-O Adams at 73, the injury scares me off using him here. On DraftKings, A few cash and tournament guys here. Brewer, Rivers, Williams and Harris can all be used in both formats, while Thornwell at 3,500 is a tournament upside guy. Of course, we love Russ at 11.6 and Mallow at 5.9 has that value, especially if Paul George is out. We've got two games to go. Let's get on to the next one. We've got the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are without Steph. They're without Klay. Draymond is back. David West is probable. Quinn Cook is probable. Jordan Bell is probable. But Kevin Durant is questionable. So we are, who knows, if Durant is out, if Steph is out, if Klay is out, what is going to go on with this Warriors team? I would imagine that you're going to get a fair bit of Omri Caspi if that actually is the case. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out for the Warriors. They're obviously not going to take any risks, especially in a game against the Kings that they're favored by 12 points in. The total is 214 here. At point guard, Quinny Cook at minimum salary. There could be an opportunity for Cookie to at least give you 20 or 24 here, but you only want to use him in a tournament. Well, De'Aaron Foxy Fox is at 5,900. It's coming off a string of pretty good games. I think his upside is decently limited, though, by his shooting and just by his overall game. Like, I just don't feel like he's got 50 points in him. So that makes him a risky cash and a not high upside tournament guy, and you know how much I dislike those options. Shawnee Livingston's at 3,900. He had 20 in the last game. He could easily get you 24 or 25, but I think that upside there is also limited. So that makes him a tougher tournament guy to look at. Also, Uncle P Nick Young's at 4,700. He had 26 last game. I think he's fine to use. He's going to get his shots. It's not like he shot at like 80% last game or anything along those lines. I think he is fine to use in cash and in tournaments. While Bogdan Bogdanovic at 52 or Budrick Hield at 58, I don't feel confident in either of them in terms of their floor. I think they can be, at those prices especially, they can be tournament players. If I had to pick one, I would probably take Hield. I think he's got the higher upside, and I wouldn't want to use either for cash. At small forward, Iguodala's at 4,000. They're still going to be really cautious with Andre's minutes. But at 4,000, you can throw that into a tournament. There is 30-point upside. Not sure if there's higher than that, but there is that 30-point ability there. Well, Durant at 11.4, if he's ready to play, and it sounds like he will play, I think that there is going to be some value there in Durant. At power forward, Draymond's back, 7,800. I'm all about using Draymond here. Get yourself 40, 50-point upside. I love using him for cash in this option and tournaments too. And then you got Labissiere, who's questionable for the Kings. He's at 5,700. I would feel not great about utilizing him. Jordy Bell had a decently strong game, first game back, $3,700. He had 19 points in the last game, but with David West back in action and Draymond Green, the minutes are going to be a little bit harder to come by for Jordy, and I don't think there's much DFS value there. Zach Randolph dropped 39 in the last game. He's at 6,000 points. He's at $6,000. The Kings don't actually need to play him big minutes in this game to lose, because that can be the only reason why he's playing so many big minutes. They'll lose regardless, so I don't see him really replicating that sort of performance. At center, Zaza's at 3,900. He's coming off the back of two really strong games, and it is a fantastically positive matchup. If Pachulia is starting again, I think that he is a tournament option, especially if Durant gets ruled out. There could be some numbers coming there. Well, Cauley Stein at 6,800. I think they should give him some decent numbers. The matchup against the Warriors can be tough, but he averages 33 against them the last three times, which is pretty bloody good. And at 6,800, I'd be okay with using him there. Let's go on to DraftKings. Cauley Stein at 62 and Uncle P at 4,000. Love Uncle P at 4,000. Both of those are cash options, while De'Aaron Fox at 54 is more of a tournament guy. And of course, we'd look at Durant at 10.8. And then if Durant is out, Draymond Green at 8.6, I think would become a fairly strong option. Not much else really stands out to me. Buddy at 56 is okay without being fantastic. Let's go on to the next game, or the last game actually for the day, and that is the Miami Heat and the Los Angeles Lakers. Joshie Richardson is doubtful. Dwayne Wade and Hassan Whiteside are both out, while the future MVP Kyle Kuzma is questionable and Brandon Ingram is out. So a ton of players out. There is value all over the place in this matchup. This is probably the most stackable game of the day for DFS. Isaiah Thomas is at 6,600. I think that is a cash value. He could start. He could play big minutes. He's played very well recently, averaging 32 over his last three. The iron shoulder, Goran Dragic at 6,700, also playing at a really high level. I like him for cash. Lonzo Ball at 7,800. The last time he played the Heat, he dropped 42 points. Yes, his shot has been way off, but if he hits two or three shots in these past two games, he's notching 42 to 45 points in each of those. He has clearly got value, maybe not as a cash play, but there's a great opportunity. While Tyler Johnson at 5,000, I actually don't mind that for cash as well, given all the injuries. Justice Winslow at small forward, actually shooting guard first. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 6,100. Never used to say this for KCP, but he's been pretty reliable, and for cash, I think it's fine. The Duke at 4,200, I wouldn't want to use him in cash, Wayne Ellington, but he does have that tournament upside, as we saw last game where he nailed six triples. While our Uncle Alex Caruso had 15 points, he's at 3,500. I don't really think we need to get too interested in him. Justice Winslow at 56, I'm all about. Big minutes coming, producing pretty much every game. Totally fine with using Justice Winslow here, while Scooter Magruder's probably a fade. Power forward Bam Adebayo stayed out of foul trouble, dropped 30 last game. 3,900, I think you have to use him. One of the best players on the board, I believe. Well, Julius Randle at only 7,400. I'm all about that. Who's going to stop him? Seriously. James Johnson, maybe. We know how good of a defender he can be, but Randle is just abusing everybody at the moment. Speaking of Jimmy Johnson, 4,700. He dropped 48 last game. Why wouldn't you want to use him? There are so many options in this game, and Johnson's another one. While Kelly Olynyk at 5,500, he's giving you over 30 a game at the moment with Whiteside out. So another one with really significant value here. As for the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma, I don't think that he will play, but at 6,400, if he does play, I think it's definitely one you want to use. He's had 47 in his last game, and he is a real opportunity guy here to use. At center, Brooke Lopez, 7,100. This is Brooklyn Nets' Brooke Lopez, crushing every game, big minutes, averaging 38 over his last five. Still think that with so many other options, it might be a tough one to go for, but it could be used. I still have a little bit of a nagging doubt about Brooke Lopez, but I really shouldn't. On DraftKings, the pricing isn't quite as good as what it is on FanDuel. I like Isaiah a lot here. I like KCP. But the other guys, Dragic, Randle, Olynyk, Kuzma, their prices are all way higher on DraftKings and FanDuel. So this game is nowhere near as stackable as what it is over on FanDuel. Even Bam Adebayo is up to 4,900. So taking away a ton of the value for this game over on DraftKings. All right, let's wrap this up by looking at the other sites. On Yahoo for tournaments, we're looking at Nerlens Noel, Sindarius Thornwell, Greggy Munro, the Duke, Zaza Pachulia, Aaron Baines, Johnny Isaac. And for cash and tournaments, Poeltl, Van Vliet, Adebayo, Uncle P, DJ Augustin, Jim Johnson, Budrick Hield, Kelly Olynyk, Caris LeVert, Marcus Morris, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jason Tatum, Johnny Simmons, Rozier, Draymond, Vooch, DeRozan, Randall, Ben Simmons, and Joel Embiid. On Moneyball for tournaments, Embiid and DeRozan, Kelly Olynyk, Budrick Hield, Noel, Thornwell, Zaza, Quinny Cook, and then for cash game, Adebayo, Uncle P, Corey Brewer, DJ Augustin, Jim Johnson, LeVert, Rivers, Hollis Jefferson, Caldwell Pope, Tatum, Cauley Stein, Dragic, John Simmons, Lou Williams, Isaiah Thomas, Lonzo Ball, Terry Rozier, Randall, and Benny Simmons. And on draft stars, Joel Embiid for tournaments, Kelly Olynyk, Damari Carroll, De'Aaron Fox, The Duke, Jarrett Allen, John Isaac, Quinn Cook, Justin Jackson, Shawnee Livingston, and rounding it out with the cash options, Bainesy, Sindarius, Bam, Corey Brewer, Uncle P, Augustine, Justice Winslow, LeVert, Marcus Morris, Cauley Stein, Jason Tatum, Johnny Simmons, Horford, Isaiah Thomas, Lou Williams, Toby Harris, DeRozan, Julius Randle, and Benny Simmons. Guys, if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, go and leave a 5-star rating and a review. And you can also find the podcast on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Good luck to round out your playoff matchup for this week. Good luck in your DFS. Go and follow me, Josh Lloyd, on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. And check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network and frequent our sponsors as well by looking at our Twitter feed at Locked On NBA Net. And big shout out to all you baseball fans. We have started up the Locked On Podcast Network for baseball. Not every team at this point, but there's about 6 or 8 teams out there. The Cubs, the Yankees, the Reds, the Twins, I don't know. There's a bunch of baseball teams that have, the Orioles, that have currently got their own Locked On pod. So check that out as well. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Josh Richardson.